I'm ready for another great week. Boy, I tell you, this is a year unlike almost any other since I started broadcasting way back in the 90s when I was about 11 years old. Anyway, what's amazing about this year is that this is usually the time everything slows down. I mean, the holidays. You know, people are making plans.
I mean, is Congress even in session right now, or are they? And I guess they kind of are.
Yeah.
But they're certainly not entertaining much in the way of anything significant.
And by the way, not a lot of people are going to work in D.C. I'll get to that. That's story coming up here on The Commute. But it is as busy as ever. It's like we're in the middle of a frenzy of news stories, local, state, and national. We're going to get to as many of them as we can here on The Commute this morning. We got on the international front, for the first time in over half a century, someone named Assad will not be running Syria. Bashar al-Assad has fled.
What was the Howard Cosell play-by-play line? Down goes Frazier!
Yeah. Well, down goes Bashar Assad, and he's been given sanctuary. No, not by Dow Constantine.
No, right, not by Jay Inslee.
No, but by Russia. And we'll talk about what that means, because there are some real implications. You know, we got 900 U.S. troops in Syria.
Isn't that weird to think about, given the geopolitics?
Whoever knew?
East of Israel.
Lots of confusion when that news
separate
came out
the whole
yesterday.
Israel equation out of it. Between Iraq and Syria.
But we'll get to that here on The Morning Commute. There was just a glorious celebration of the reopening of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris over the weekend. A fire had gutted one of the most elegant, magnificent cathedrals on the planet back in 2019. The president of France, President Macron, had vowed that they would rebuild it within 5 years. And everybody went, oh, yeah, right. It doesn't have a roof. The spire has fallen. It's completely gutted, you know, from within. What are you talking about? I mean, look how long it took them to restore the footprint of Ground Zero. But 5 years later, it has reopened, and it is more magnificent than ever. Donald Trump made his first trip as a, once again, world leader.
President-elect.
It's interesting. Joe Biden said he had a scheduling conflict. I think the conflict was, is he going? Then I've got a conflict. but Jill Biden was there.
Yeah, FLOTUS was there.
And apparently they got along pretty well. But what was interesting is when Donald Trump showed up at the cathedral, all the other world leaders stood up to meet and greet him, President Zelensky.
Right. Emmanuel Macron.
And Prince William.
Mm, okay, I missed that shot. I saw the shot of Trump, Macron, and Zelensky all seated together.
Yeah, didn't they all have little conversations, too?
Yeah, and the prime minister, chancellors of, Germany and Italy. And, I mean, it was for Trump, a very good weekend.
He's just doing so much, and we're not even in January yet where he officially gets to be back in the White House. Amazing.
Yes, and some more good news. Trump's designated appointee to lead the Department of Defense, Pete Hegseth, was going through a terrible media storm over the last couple of weeks that was clearly aimed at sinking his candidacy to run the Pentagon. Well, it now looks like there's an upswing in his favor that is growing. So we have that and so much more in front of us that we're going to get to. I want to start, however, local. Some local good news here. As the year is coming to a close, crime, overall crime, is starting to drop. And one of the reasons why is that local cities now have the option of cracking down on drugs. And the ones that are, the ones that are choosing to go after drug users and drug dealers alike, are seeing crime in all of its various, you know, manifestations is starting to go down. Here is Mayor Jim Farrell, a former county prosecutor back when King County used to prosecute crime, telling Como News that the news in Federal Way is very good, and here's why.
When we allowed drug, you know, street-level narcotic activity to occur without any restrictions, it was really not good for anybody.
The city of Federal Way seeing major changes to its crime rate. Preliminary data released by the city reported a dramatic 402% increase in drug arrests after new state laws have now made drug possession a gross misdemeanor.
We don't want to arrest people and put them in jail for having an addiction issue indefinitely, I mean, or for long periods of time. What we want to do is get them out of this cycle of addiction and really stop that behavior.
Mayor Jim Farrell says that change in behavior starts with getting people into treatment via the justice system.
At district and municipal courts, gross misdemeanors are really treatment courts, and that's where we want to get to. The arrest is a first step in getting people back to a productive life.
Mayor Farrell also credits recent state law changes loosening requirements on initiating police pursuits as the city sees crime rates dropping in murders, robberies, burglaries, and motor vehicle thefts. Under state law, officers are now able to chase suspects if they have a reasonable suspicion they've broken the law.
I mean, I think that the word had gotten out with the criminal element that it was a free crime zone, and it was absolutely just unacceptable. And so thank God the legislature changed it, and now we're getting back to some sort of normalcy.
And Federal Way police expect that by the end of the year, once all the data is collected, that the overall crime rate in the city will have dropped by between 10 and 12% overall.
Not bad year to year. But notice what caused it. The police chase law did not happen because of Olympia. The police chase law, the new police chase law that allows police to go after bad guys, that happened in spite of Olympia, in spite of the state capitol. That was an initiative that was heading for the ballot and probably about 70% voter approval. And the Democrats in Olympia, who passed the initial restrictions on police chases, remember that? They did a 180. Basically, they said, we'll take the hit. We'll take the loss. We don't want this on the ballot. We don't want this to be an issue in any of our legislative campaigns. Just let's get rid of it. And they did. They voted for the initiative. It was an initiative to the legislature. So basically the way it works is the legislature is allowed a pass. The legislature can either vote for the initiative that qualifies, or they can not vote for it, which puts it automatically before the people on the November ballot. That's what happened. And so the police chases, police being allowed to chase bad guys, that happened in spite of Olympia. The drug changes, again, that was after Olympia all but legalized street drugs, and it blew up in everybody's face. And so they were dragged kicking and screaming into passing a kind of sort of gross misdemeanor. And, it, you know, if we went back to where it was 4 years ago, it would be a felony. But at least a gross misdemeanor is better than no crime at all. So now that we see these reforms in place, already the news is getting better. And the takeaway for you here, which the rest of the media haven't caught up with yet, it's going to take them a while. That's why this show is on the air and why this show is mandatory listening for those who want to be fully informed, is that, yes, we're making progress on crime because we reversed what the woke political establishment that runs King County and Olympia, we reversed what they wanted to do. And keep this in mind, there are still legislators who want to continue letting bad guys out of prison, shortening sentences for violent offenses. I mean, there's still that agenda that is out there. And instead, we have to keep pushing in the opposite direction. So thank you, Brian Haywood, for getting that initiative qualified. They never would have done this. They never would have allowed police chases if it wasn't for him and that initiative. So that was all very good news. Donald Trump, again, had a great weekend. He also sat down for a pretty extensive interview with Kristen Welker at NBC's Meet the Press. And he tackled a couple of very interesting issues. One of them was your rivals are convinced, or the media have reported extensively, you're going after your political enemies. Now, this is because the media and the campaign for Kamala Harris wanted it to become an issue. They wanted to scare people and say, you know, if Donald Trump is elected, he's going to be a fascist. He's going to go after his enemies. He's even said so. There was a tweet. He's coming after you. That just as recently as last week, an MSNBC commentator said that Trump is talking about firing squads. I mean, they're absolutely fanatical. They're absolutely crazy. And then they go to Donald Trump and say, a lot of people are convinced you're going to do this. Here's how Trump handled it.
Are you going to do that? Are you going to go after Joe Biden?
I'm really looking to make our country successful. I'm not looking to go back into the past. I'm looking to make our country successful. Retribution will be through success. If we can make our success, this country successful, that would be my greatest, that would be such a great achievement. Bring it back.
Yeah, so much for being a Hitler wannabe. So much for being a fascist who admires authoritarian dictators. And by the way, this is what Donald Trump did 8 years ago when he took office. He decided not to seek retribution against Hillary Clinton. He decided not to go there. He did not follow through on his threat to have her investigated. She had exposure, by the way. She could have been in serious trouble. She wasn't. He recognized it wouldn't be good for the country. And so he just puts all that to rest. You know, It isn't often that Donald Trump sounds like Michelle Obama, but...
No, our motto is, when they go low, we go high.
Yeah, well, they didn't in 2024.
There wasn't much of that here, pre-election 2024.
Didn't hear much of that in 2024 from the Democrats. But Trump is taking the high ground.
Retribution will be through success. If we can make our success, this country successful, that would be my greatest, that would be such a great achievement.
And by the way, isn't he right? Isn't success the ultimate retribution?
Maybe Trump's mellowing with age.
Here's Trump basically just talking to reporters. So you have an actual conversation, an actual interview, not a tweet that's taken out of context, not a warning given by his political opponents, political enemies, political adversaries. You just have Trump say, no, we want success. He could seek political retribution, go after Alejandro Mayorkas and some of the Biden people for their disgraceful policies on the border that aided and abetted illegal entry into this country and many, many felonies that resulted, drug trafficking, human trafficking, other contraband, etc. But wouldn't the ultimate retribution be to fix the border, to build the wall, to bring illegal immigration to a virtual halt, and then deport people who are in the country illegally who came here, especially in the last 4 years? Isn't that the success of your policy is the ultimate retribution? So he's right about that. Hey, welcome to the Monday edition, December 9th edition of the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with a social media sweep. It's going to be a busy Monday. We got a lot to talk about, a lot to cover, a lot to explain on The John Carlson Show. Good morning. Hi, Tony Bennett. By the way, just to tie a bow on that story about Federal Way crime dropping because they started getting tougher on drug offenders.
Cops allowed to be cops.
They allowed cops to chase bad guys. Mm-hmm. Murder in Federal Way, down 50%.
50?
Down 50%.
I saw something about drug arrests are up 400%?
400%. From, you know, because next to nothing, because you couldn't go out, you didn't have gross misdemeanor status for the offense. It was next to nothing. Remember, you had to give them a brochure. When you caught someone smoking fentanyl, you had to give them a freaking brochure. That was the law in this state.
The brochure.
For like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, the brochure was to urge them to go to rehab.
And in Snohomish County, they say, how did that work? Zero. Nobody. Of course, nobody. But nobody followed through. Anyway, murder down 50% in Federal Way. Car theft down 52%. Yeah. 52%, that's in 1 year.
Solid improvements there.
There we go.
But like you were pointing out about the drug-related law stuff, Democrats promise stuff, but they can't deliver it.
No. So. Well, no, they'll and spend then, of course, money making things worse.
You know, Federal Way, the pendulum swings back the other direction as people realize, hey, all these things that you wanted to change, you said would work, are not working, and now they're finally pushing back in the opposite direction, and they're starting to get results.
So, speaking of results, the results of your social media sweep this morning have yielded some interesting little nuggets of information.
A big story that we were hitting on as the show was starting to end Friday is the Daniel Penny trial in New York City. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And the jury was telling the judge that they were essentially deadlocked, that they could not agree on a verdict for the most serious charge, the manslaughter charge. I think at that point when you were on the air Friday before 9 o'clock, the judge said, go back, keep working, keep trying to reach a verdict. By the end of the day Friday, they still had not gotten any further. The judge ultimately on Friday ended up throwing out the most serious charge, the manslaughter charge.
Daniel Penny trial. He is expected back in court today as the jury decides his fate, now deliberating on the second lesser charge.
And this after the judge presiding over the case tossed out the manslaughter charge in this case.
That's a report from WYNW in New York.
Now, you know what the judge should have done? Because the judge is really showing the bias here. This, again, is a completely groundless criminal complaint against Daniel Penny. Mm-hmm. The only reason it exists is that the prosecution made it racial. Because right. Daniel Penny is white. And
I wanted to ask, did
and
you...
And the man he was restraining was black.
Right, Jordan Neely.
So they're trying to make it about race. It wasn't about race. It was about Jordan Neely with long-time drug and mental health right. problems and a long criminal record, was going crazy on a subway.
Did you come across any reports about the trial that the prosecution called witnesses, what we'd call character witnesses, about Daniel Penny that said, you know what, I was around Daniel Penny and he used racially insensitive or racially charged language? I mean, from Daniel Penny's service in the military days, did the prosecution bring any witnesses?
No, because there are none.
To that fact?
And don't think they weren't looking for it. They were looking for it, and they didn't have it.
So if that was part of their motivation for bringing this charge anyway, that this was somehow racially charged, how come they couldn't find anybody in Daniel Penny's life that had an experience where Daniel Penny said something that would have resulted in testimony to that end in court?
Was there a pattern of him going... getting out of hand, getting out of line, going to extremes
okay.
when it came to dealing with troublemakers.
Yeah.
You know, is this the kind of guy who runs out looking for trouble
yeah.
so he can say he was stopping yeah. it? No.
I've read a bunch of reports about this trial. I have not seen anything that relates to testimony of that nature. And then you've got the DA, Alvin Bragg, who apparently wanted to prosecute this case to placate a vocal but tiny group of activists rather than actually examining a system that betrayed Jordan Neely.
That's because Alvin Bragg is on the side
right?
of those but extremists.
Like Alvin Bragg and Democrats, they can't look at the failed government systems that they've created. They won't look at themselves, so they need to focus that blame anywhere else but themselves. And that's what really compounds
right.
this tragedy of Jordan Neely's death.
So anyway, the Daniel Penny case should be dismissed, and the judge could have done that. So we got to wait through another day, and let's see whether the jury remains deadlocked or not. It's going to be if Daniel Penny is found guilty, it's going to be appealed, and Daniel Penny is going to prevail. But it's just outrageous it even has come to that. It's 6:30 on the John Carlson Show. It's 25 minutes to 7 o'clock. All right, that's, of course, this bumper coming back from commercial break is from A Charlie Brown Christmas, which I think came out in 1965.
59th anniversary. Free showing, says Apple Plus TV this weekend. You'll see it on various streaming channels and what have you. Saturday or Sunday, your choice.
It remains one of the most beloved Christmas specials of all time.
Yeah, Como TV just did a survey that between The Grinch, between The Polar Express, and other shows, and still voted
number one.
Got to see it.
And by the way, the network, and I forget which network it was at the time, whether it was CBS or NBC, they thought it was going to flop. And they went ahead and scheduled it and thought, you know, our losses might be minimized since it is the holidays after all and it's a holiday special. And it just blew the roof off.
Yeah, what did CBS executives say? Okay, everything's cool until you get to what is Christmas all about, Charlie Brown? And then Linus took the stage and just kind of revealed it all, and they said,
"Well,
we Saint
Luke,
know.
it was the Christmas story,
right?" And they said, "We
the
don't
star
know this,
in Bethlehem.
We don't know if the audience can handle this." And Schultz said, "I'll take a risk."
And yeah. here's the fascinating part about this: Charlie Brown Christmas, for the most part, was written, with the exception of Charles Schultz, was written by, produced by. and arranged by the music by Jews.
I never knew that.
And yet here was this celebration of, if you will, the reason for the season. And CBS higher-ups were convinced, oh boy, I don't think America's going to go for this. America loved it. Another controversy is that if you listen, think of the music that accompanied the Charlie Brown Christmas, it was jazz. And the network exec said, what are you doing putting jazz on a kid's Christmas special for?
Cruising around Santa Rosa, heard some jazz of Vince Guaraldi on radio and thought, And then to use kids' voices.
And that was the other thing.
Yeah.
So why are you using real children? We have trained adults to sound like kids. You don't need real kids. Charles Schulz insisted on it. No, it's... Once again, even back then, the experts, the elites, were a suspect class. Oh, okay. It's 22 minutes to 7 o'clock. Quick question. After COVID, how long did it take you, if you're an employee or a business owner, to get back to normal? In other words, when did you go back to the office? Was it 2021? Did it take a little while? Maybe it wasn't until the first quarter of 2022. You know, eventually, you know, you had to come to work maybe 3 days a week and then 5 days a week. I ask you this question because in Washington, D.C., they still haven't gone back to work. 94% of federal workers in the nation's capital do not show up for work. They don't show up in the buildings. It has become such a major problem that federal buildings say the lack of employees has led to water stagnation. In other words, you know, people aren't turning on the faucets, washing their hands, flushing toilets, et cetera, et cetera. So the water has stagnated in all these empty federal buildings, which creates conditions for the spread of Legionella and increases the likelihood that other buildings could be contaminated, which, of course, means that people will be told you can't come into work. Underutilized buildings causes hazardous water. Here is how bad the situation is in Washington right now. Again, I'm talking about federal employees within the nation's capital, which are among the highest paid in America. 90%, 9 out of 10 bureaucrats in the nation's capital telework. They work from home. One third of those bureaucrats are entirely remote, 5 days a week. Others come in once or twice a week. How many show up 5 days a week in the nation's capital? 6%. 6%. At the end of 2024. So you wonder, you know, veterans, small business owners, farmers, senior citizens, people trying to get help in Washington, and people aren't answering phone calls or they're not getting back to people. The backlog of services. Again, people not answering calls for service. The Department of Commerce, the Department of Housing and Urban Development have an attendance rate in their buildings of 11%. 11% is actually high compared to the other departments in Washington, D.C. The Environmental Protection Agency, for instance, has building capacity in D.C., the nation's capital, of 2,400 people. So when everyone's showing up to work, they have up to 2,400 people. They've got at least got room for 2,400 people. How many show up? Not 2,400. 195 people is their daily average occupancy at the EPA. That is 8%. The Department of Veterans Affairs, they have room for 2,408 people. They have room for 2,400 plus. But only 172 people show up. Again, this is an average occupancy. The Mammoth Department of Agriculture has capacity for over 7,400 employees. How many show up? 456 is the average daily attendance. That's an average of 6% of the workforce is actually showing up. The Department of Energy has room for over 4,800 people in the Forestall building. 4,800 people right there on Independence Avenue. How many people show up to work per average? 8. Not 8% out of 4,800. 8 employees show up. 8 out of 4,800. That is an average percentage of 0. They don't even come close to 1%. This is your nation's capital. Now, there's actually some good news out of this, and that is Donald Trump has Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy heading up this new department on government efficiency. They know exactly where to start looking. And by the way, when I say that only 6% of federal employees regularly show up for work, that's kind of overstating it, because there are some jobs that you have to be there. I mean, as an example, security officials, the security officers, they have to be there. You can't do that work remotely. So if you take out, if you don't include, you know, custodial staff, people cleaning the building, the people doing landscaping, they have to be there. So if you take out the people who have to be there, it's not 6% of employees. It's only about 1% are showing up. But if you want to know where to start making eliminations, well, Elon just, you know, has a wonderful roadmap that's been prepared for him and Vivek from all these federal employees who can't be bothered to show up for work. Again, if you're just joining me, 94% of federal employees in the nation's capital do not report to work regularly. Only 6% actually go to work. And a health concern has broken out that so few people are in these buildings that water is not circulating through the system from, you know, faucets and toilets flushing and et cetera, you know, all the ways that water circulates through a building, that stagnation, water stagnation, has now become a health issue. So you would think that in 2024, everyone would have gotten back to work by now. But if you look at the areas where they're still dragging their feet, and it's not just in Washington, D.C., it's happening in cities, the bigger cities, the bluest, quite frankly, to put it bluntly, the more liberal, progressive cities are the ones where people are still not going back to work. And you've heard the old slogan, you get what you pay for. This time, no, you're not getting what you're paying for. That's the problem. That's the outrage. It is 11 minutes to 7 o'clock. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Pete Hegseth, what looks like his nomination to be defense secretary was doomed. Now it is not. He's on the upswing. We'll tell you why and who's coming to his aid right after this. Wow. The momentum has completely reversed in the battle for Pete Hegseth to become President-elect Trump's defense secretary. Here's what's going on. Rank and file members of the military are now in a groundswell of support. They're supporting this guy. They're going public. A group of veterans who played key roles in the evacuation campaign. Remember the private evacuation campaign after thousands of Americans were left behind in Afghanistan with that awful withdrawal by the Biden administration. They are now speaking out on behalf of Pete Hegseth. One of the people who run one of those evacuation efforts said, "I've never seen this before. I've been around the military for 30 years. I've never seen people in the Marine Corps putting on social media who they want to be their Secretary of Defense. Everyone wants him in because he doesn't have a star," meaning he's not a general, arguing that generals have become too separated from regular troops to carry out their mission effectively. So we will see what happens. But it looks like Pete Hegseth is no longer on the outs. It looks like he is very much heading back toward confirmation to be defense secretary for President Trump. How about that? It is 56 minutes after 6 o'clock. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Monday morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Ninth day of December. Boy, this has got to be my favorite tweet of the weekend. Somebody sent this to me, and I confirmed it. There is a publication in D.C., an online publication called The Bulwark.
I've heard of this.
The Bulwark.
I'm not familiar with it, but sure.
It was put together by anti-Trump Republicans in D.C., whose publications began losing subscribers and in some cases went out of business because they were being anti-Trump, and people who read online conservative publications tend to be conservatives, and conservatives tend to like Donald Trump. So anyway, these guys, it's part of the anti-Trump Republican crowd. You see them on CNN all the time. you know, as I used to joke, but it was a true statement, CNN's idea of balance is to make sure that anti-Trump Democrats were counterpointed by anti-Trump Republicans. And so they're all over the nation's capital. One of them is named Jonathan Last, his actual Jonathan V. Last. He's the editor of The Bulwark. And he sent out a tweet saying that it's time for Democrats to stop trying to oppose Donald Trump's mass deportation efforts of illegal immigrants. You know why?
I'm going back and forth. I'm vacillating between this being
I just love this.
Accurate or incredibly stupid.
I'll just read the quote to you. Democrats should spend exactly zero political capital stopping any Trump deportation efforts. It is madness to spend your political capital trying to help people who are no longer a major part of your electoral coalition. In other words, illegals can no longer be counted on to oppose Trump, so why would you help them?
So much for the rule of law.
He was referring to an article where a woman, Hispanic woman in the country illegally, but whose kids are legal, because they were born in the United States, and we have what's called birthright citizenship. If you are born in the United States, even if your parents are here legally, you're a citizen. And in the article, this woman said she's glad her children voted for Trump. She believes that Trump wants to deport criminals, not people like her who crossed the border undetected back in the 1990s and have never gotten in trouble with the law. Quote, they know who's been behaving well and who hasn't been, she said. So in response to this, this guy, Jonathan V. Last, said, it's madness trying to spend your political capital helping people, i.e. illegals, who are no longer a major part of your electoral coalition. So in other words, if we keep you in the country and then make you citizens, but we can't count on your vote, well, why should we be doing that? Why should we be helping you? I love how increasingly people who are there to help push the progressive agenda forward, regardless of what party they're in, I love it when they start saying the quiet part out loud. Yes, the whole bringing people out of the shadows and allowing them to earn citizenship movement, that whole thing was just about adding Democrat voters. Keep them dependent on the government for services, and then they'll reciprocate with their votes. But if you can't count on them to do that, then go ahead and deport them, for crying out loud. Oh, you are listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right. I started talking to you last week about the increasingly tenuous hold that Syria's dictator, Bashar al-Assad, like his father before him, had on the country. That rebels had now taken the second largest city in Syria, Aleppo. Well, it's been a pretty eventful weekend because now the rebels have taken the largest city in Syria, Damascus. And Bashar al-Assad has fled the country. He's out. He has been offered sanctuary by Russia. So what does this mean? Now, I told you that on the one hand, it's very good for the United States that Syria has fallen, because they're two major sponsors and supporters were the government of Russia and the government of Iran. Okay? Neither one are good guys. And this exposes their weaknesses. But there's, I said, it's more complicated than that, because the people who are trying to get rid and have now since gotten rid of Assad, those people are linked to Al-Qaeda, the people who attacked America on 9/11, and ISIS, the Islamic State. In fact, we actually have 900 American troops in Syria right now. They are there trying to counter Islamic fanaticism, jihadism. So with that said, we have, and this is, you know, the latest, we have General Frank McKenzie. He used to head CENTCOM. And he's, of course, retired now. And he was speaking on ABC's This Week with Martha Raddatz about where we go from here.
900 U.S. troops in Syria. What happens to them? What do you think they should do at this point?
Well, Martha, it's important to understand why those troops are there. Our troops east of the Euphrates River, paired with our SDF partners, are there to keep a lid on ISIS and prevent violent extremist organizations from gathering strength and being able to attack the homeland of the United States. ISIS aspires to attack us. As we know, ISIS launched a successful attack against Russia just a few months ago. That's why those troops are there. So any decision to bring them out would need to weigh that going forward. And I'm certain that the new administration will take a hard look on that when they come into office.
But what about the chaos that's happening right now, the change that's happening? What does that mean for those U.S. troops who are there? Is there more danger?
We'll be able to defend ourselves. I think, actually, there's probably less danger right now than there was before, because what you see are the Iranians, Lebanese Hezbollah, and, in fact, the Russians are all on their back heels now as a result of what has just happened in Syria. One of the best equipped, best trained, and most capable forces in all of Syria today is actually our Kurdish partners east of the Euphrates River. They'll be able to defend themselves. I'm confident of that, Martha.
And you brought up Russia, Iran, Hezbollah. What does it mean for all of those countries and the region?
They all placed a bet on Bashar Assad, and that bet has turned south for them. Russia's interest is maintaining its air base and naval base on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean. So they're going to try very hard to keep that base with whatever entity comes into power in the wake of Bashar Assad's departure. The Iranians need Syria as a land bridge so that they can move equipment into Lebanon in order to threaten Israel. So that's going to be they're going to be very concerned about that. And of course, Lebanese Hezbollah has also propped up the Syrian regime for many years. For all three of these entities, this is bad news because now they had a partner, not necessarily a good and capable partner, but a partner, and he is gone. He's left the stage. So they're going to have to negotiate with who comes in. So it's bad news for them. It's less obvious, Martha, who it's good news for. I'm not sure it's ultimately going to be good news for the people of Syria. We could have an Islamic State arise there, which will have profound negative implications across the region. That is possible. There are other possibilities as well. And I think in the next 48, 72, 96 hours, this will begin to become clearer to us.
And you talk about an Islamic State. The Islamic group leading this rebel offensive is considered a terror group. They had ties to Al-Qaeda. Who are they? I know they say they're trying to be different now. What do you expect?
Well, we have a $10 million bounty on the head of that group, Jelani. So he has a significant track record. Certainly, he could evince new ideas coming in. It's been my experience, though, that typically they don't. I think what you're going to see is a period of infighting. They'll hold the capital. They'll try to establish themselves. They'll try to seek recognition. Russia will try to work their way back into their good graces. Iran will do the same. I think Israel will be concerned about the possibility of attacks across Golan. It's my understanding that the Israelis have probably moved some forces into a buffer area in southern Syria in order to protect themselves. So we're at it's a significant moment in Syrian history. I wish I could be more hopeful that it will mean good news for the Syrian people. I think that's very unclear right now.
Yeah. So there's a reason you haven't seen Israel taking sides in this war. Have you noticed that? Israel has stayed out of this conflict, and keep in mind, Syria is immediately to the north, the northwest of Israel. The northeast is, or rather, it's to the northeast of Israel. The northwest is Lebanon. So, Syria could be a staging base for not just ISIS, but for Iran. That's not going to happen, and that part is good. The only reason Russia is there, and this goes back in history a little bit, but the reason why Russia is there is because President Barack Obama basically invited them in. Remember, he didn't want the United States to support the opposition to Bashar Assad way back in 2011. That's when this war started. And so, Vladimir Putin basically, with our blessing, filled the void. And, of course, he ends up with military, bases, a naval base and an army base out of that. And so, if you're wondering why Russia and Iran are in there, it's because we chose to step back and even welcome Russian influence. So if you're wondering why is all this happening now, that could be summed up in one word: Israel. Israel, first of all, extinguished Hamas in Gaza largely by ignoring the United States. Remember, we were telling, you need a ceasefire. You need a ceasefire. And don't go into southern Gaza. They said, excuse me, we have a war to win here. We were attacked. We're going after them. Their main sponsor was Iran. So Israel ends up taking out Gaza, taking out Hamas in Gaza, killing their leader, Yahya Sinwar. Then they went up north and they took out the head of Hezbollah, the terror group up there that had been menacing Israel. His name was Hassan Nasrallah. And now you can't even, the Iranians can't even protect Assad in Syria. So Donald Trump's reaction to all of this is to say that the U.S. should stay out of this conflict, that we don't have any vital interest There is no reason for us to step into this. Now, that was when Assad was still in power and still fighting back. So we'll see what to do. Yeah, but here's a name you're going to be hearing a lot in the next few weeks. Abu al-Jalani. Abu al-Jalani is the leader of the coalition that just ousted Assad, Bashar al-Assad, and took control of the country. He is the guy that we have a bounty on. He's a bad guy. He was heavily involved with ISIS and al-Qaeda earlier this century. He now says he's broken with them and he wants a diverse government. He has seen to it that his forces haven't attacked Christians, the few remaining Christians in Syria. We'll see. But remember that name, Jalani. And we'll see where we are in a week.
So, John, from just tuning in, listening to this, you helped out explain it. Bad guys against bad guys.
Yeah.
But yet in Syria, we have 900 troops. Do we leave them there? Do we take them and get them home and just let those people figure out their worlds?
Oh, those troops are safe.
Okay. And how are they?
They're not going after those troops.
Okay.
They're east of the Euphrates, as you heard General McKenzie say, and close by are the Kurds, and they are one of the most impressive fighting forces, and they're on our side. So we're okay where we are right there. We're trying to put down the forces of the most militant, fanatical Islamic forces that would love to attack the United States, either here or attack U.S. installations abroad. So they're there for that reason. They're not there to take sides in the war. All right, it is 22 minutes after 7 o'clock. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with the social media sweep. First one this hour as the John Carlson Show continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what's going on the social media world at 7:28 in the morning?
Found something useful from our afternoon host, Ari Hoffman, who's on 3 to 6 on KVI.
Mm-hmm.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Ari caught something that was in the Seattle Times about Bob Ferguson, the governor-elect in our state. And Ari posted that Ferguson tells the Seattle Times, Ferguson has, quote, no problem with deportations of individuals who are criminals under existing policies and law, and then acknowledged that the president of the United States has that broad legal authority on immigration. And then Ari's question becomes, do you think the guy who sued Trump 100 plus times is being honest or not? Is there a way to read the tea leaves here, John?
Well, how could he object to something that is A, completely, totally constitutional and legal, uh-huh, and B, federal?
Right, yeah.
So when you say, I don't have a problem with that, that's almost like saying, I don't have a problem with us having a Department of Defense.
And I suppose last week's Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruling against Dow Constantine may have played into that a little bit as well. Having to
humiliating.
Reevaluate his answers on questions like that.
No, that slapdown of Dow Constantine by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals when he tried to argue that he should be able to prevent
the
federal government from flying out of Boeing Field with people ordered out of the country by immigration judges.
Adjudicated out of the country.
That left a mark. That's the kind of thing that is going to influence what happens around the country when local officials, state officials, county officials, city mayors realize, oh, I don't have all that latitude after all when it comes to stopping the feds from getting rid of people in the country illegally.
Real quick, good news story here to round out the social media sweep. Residents in Lewis County are celebrating the fifth anniversary of the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, for Lewis County. It's kind of a joint effort with some charitable groups and Dolly Parton's charity foundation. But the Dolly Parton Imagination Library is an early literacy program that provides thousands of free, high-quality books to kids up to age five, regardless of family income. In the 5 years that it's been operating in Lewis County, the library's provided 138,000 books to 2,600 kids enrolled in the program throughout the country. And then Dolly Parton's Imagination Library was launched back in 1995, and since then, it has distributed over 200 million books globally.
Whoa.
And that story comes from the Centralia Chronicle newspaper website.
Goodness sakes.
But pretty cool.
That many. I'm impressed.
She's done so much this year.
Yes. Just America's sweetheart, Dolly Parton,
she
right?
She really is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It is 29 minutes after 7 o'clock. By the way, something very interesting happened in King County politics over the weekend, and it hasn't hit the papers yet, but I know all about it, and I'm going to share it with you coming right up.
Alumni that you are, University of Washington, did you know Happy Holidays from the Husky Marching Band CD is still available? Brad McDavid gave this to me as some of the songs I used to do when I produced Husky Game Day.
That goes back a couple of years.
Yeah. And we didn't mention, too, big news yesterday, of course, bowl games announced. If you didn't hear, UW football will face Louisville in the Sun Bowl. That'll be San Diego, December 27th. Washington State football will face Syracuse in the Holiday Bowl. Oh, that'll be December 27th. Okay. And then we got El Paso on New Year's Eve for the Huskies in Louisville. Could not find a Christmas CD from the WSU marching band, Phil. We need to.
Oh, no.
Get word to them. Symphony. Yes. I got the symphony, but not the marching band. Phil, there you go.
It is coming up here at 23 minutes to 8 o'clock. So something very interesting happened over the weekend. Every 2 years, the King County Republican Party, and I think the Democratic Party, same story, they have what's called a reorganization meeting, which means that the party leadership comes up for reauthorization, reelection, if you will. And it's usually what you call the usual suspects, people whose names you know very well from grassroots activism going back a long time. And this past weekend, the Republicans, the King County Republicans, had their reorg meeting. It was at the Eden Church in Newcastle, which is a town between Bellevue and Renton. Anyway, the current King County chairman, a guy named, we've had him on the show a bunch of times, what I call the man with three first names, Matthew Patrick Thomas, has been a popular guest on the show, and he opted not to run for another term. And so someone who is very popular, very well-liked, and experienced in politics, Patty Mann, a former King County firefighter and paramedic, ran to succeed him. And they held the election over the weekend at the Eden Church, as I mentioned. And instead, an entirely new cast of characters came in. They defeated everyone that was on the slate to succeed Matthew Patrick Thomas and replace them. And the new county chair is a woman named Jolie Lansdowne. Jolie Lansdowne and I have something in common. We have both run for the state legislature in West Seattle's 34th district. And I ran, ooh, my goodness, 1984. That was the last year any Republican was elected to the legislature in the city of Seattle. For some reason, I when I decided to run for office, I decided to do it in the town where I grew up, West Seattle, even though, again, Republicans were a quickly vanishing breed within the entire city. Well, I still got 49.2% of the vote. Came close. Very respectably close. But I lost. Jolie just ran for the 34th. She fell short, too. But she ran for county chair, and she won overwhelmingly. I guess you could say a whole new crowd is in town running the King County Party. They are, many of them supported, they all supported Donald Trump for president, of course. And for that matter, most of the people running to succeed Matthew Patrick Thomas and the other people running at various offices of King County. You know, your committee man, committee woman, your vice chair, et cetera, et cetera. Most of them were for Donald Trump, not all of them. But most of the people who prevailed against them, led by Julie Lansdowne, actually supported Semi Byrd. And, of course, they are moving on from Semi Byrd, but it'll be very interesting to see where they're going to take the King County Republican Party, because the Republican Party now has a completely new cast of characters. Many of them are names that were not familiar to me. So you talk about replenishing and refreshing and starting all over again. That is basically what the King County Republican Party is about to do. And what was driving these activists who, again, took over the party with a decisive majority is they just didn't feel represented. There's no particular politician that they're there to push for. Usually that's what drives insurgencies against the status quo. They have an alternative candidate that they want for this or that office. But again, this was after the election. So they weren't pushing a candidate. They weren't pushing a particular cause like abortion or guns or taxes or whatnot. They just basically said, no, we're just tired of the people who've been there. And we want new people and a whole new approach. So I've asked Jolie if she would like to join us, and she would. She wasn't able to make it today, so we hope to get her on the show in the next couple of days and share what her vision is and what her plans are. And if people want to get involved, there's a whole new crowd at the King County Republican Party. Your comments, certainly welcome at 206-421-5757. Now you can call or you can text your comments. Again, that's 206-421-5757. And, you know, the meeting started off very, very cantankerous and adversarial. People at the mics, endlessly, calling a points of order, and Matthew Patrick Thomas trying to keep order in the House and everything. The bottom line, though, is for all the histrionics and for all the yelling back and forth, it was very clear very early that the group called We the People, if you will, the reformers, they had the vast majority of the people there, almost 2-1. So I actually said to one of the leaders, I said, Why all the conflict? You've got the votes. I mean, it's very clear what's going to happen here. But anyway, the entire slate of the We the People candidates running for various county offices or county party offices ended up winning. And we'll see what that means for King County going forward. One of the things that it also shows me is that more and more political activism is also happening outside the party structure. In fact, you can make a very good case that if you are politically right of center, the organization that is doing the most to challenge and change the status quo in Washington politics is not the Republican Party at the state or the county level. It's Let's Go Washington. It's Brian Haywood's organization. They understand the power of what I call practical populism, which is you want to be populist and open up your movement to people, whether they consider themselves Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and you want to give them ideas worth voting for, which means going the initiative route. Because in terms of politics in Washington, we're a one-party state. The Democrats completely dominate the state legislature, and they'll have another 4 years at least in the governor's office with Bob Ferguson. So that's your other major takeaway, is that increasingly people are either opting to change and challenge party leadership, or they're just going outside the party altogether and saying, you know, I only have so much time, I have so much energy, I only have so much money, I want to get involved in a way that's going to have the most effect, so I think I'll get involved with Let's Go Washington. I know that I am certainly encouraging as many people as I know to get involved with Let's Go Washington. I think they're the future, and I'm very excited about where they could take us. It is coming up here on 48 minutes after 7 o'clock on The Commute with Carlson, 12 minutes to 8. Good morning, everybody. The Commute with Carlson continues. When we come back, a comic makes fun of Tesla owners, but wait until you hear the angle he's coming from here. It's straight ahead. Okay, this is going viral.
Here's the key line here on the song.
Oh, Dan Fogelberg.
Snowing Christmas Eve, watch.
I do love this song.
Dan Fogelberg, yeah.
Dan Fogelberg left us way too early, didn't he? Anyway, a comedian was making fun, not of Tesla cars, but of some of the people who drive them. And Donald Trump got a hold of this and reposted it. So now it's gone viral, millions of people checking it out. This is all over the internet right now. This is, again, a comedian making the case. Well, you'll hear it.
My favorite thing about the election is a lot of liberals were driving Teslas. And now they're trapped. Dark MAGA Elon came out. Gotcha. The T on the back is for Trump. You funded the last 6 months of the campaign. And they can't get rid of them because Republicans are now like gasoline. I can just see people now with a Sharpie at night going up to it. R-U-M-P. You're not going to be able to look at a Tesla without thinking about that ever.
I love that. The T stands for Trump. Elon says, I gotcha. add some interesting context to that story in the Seattle Times about how people were taking out their frustrations on the election by flipping off people driving Teslas. Some of the people in the Teslas, no, no, I'm on your side.
Buyer's remorse.
Oh, still a great car, though. All right. It is coming up here on 4.5 minutes to 8 o'clock, hour number 3 of the John Carlson Show, straight ahead. Monday morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, ninth day of December. Boy, this has got to be my favorite tweet of the weekend. Somebody sent this to me, and I confirmed it. There is a publication in D.C., an online publication called The Bulwark.
I've heard of this.
The Bulwark.
I'm not familiar with it, but sure.
It was put together by anti-Trump Republicans in D.C., whose publications began losing subscribers and in some cases went out of business because they were being anti-Trump, and people who read online conservative publications tend to be conservatives, and conservatives tend to like Donald Trump. So anyway, these guys, it's part of the anti-Trump Republican crowd. You see them on CNN all the time. You know, as I used to joke, but it was a true statement, CNN's idea of balance is to make sure that anti-Trump Democrats were counterpointed by anti-Trump Republicans. And so they're all over the nation's capital. One of them is named Jonathan Last, his actual Jonathan V. Last. He's the editor of The Bulwark. And he sent out a tweet saying that it's time for Democrats to stop trying to oppose Donald Trump's mass deportation efforts of illegal immigrants. You know why?
I'm going back and forth. I'm vacillating between this being accurate or incredibly stupid.
I'll just read the quote to you. Democrats should spend exactly zero political capital stopping any Trump deportation efforts. It is madness to spend your political capital trying to help people who are no longer a major part of your electoral coalition. In other words, illegals can no longer be counted on to oppose Trump, so why would you help them?
So much for the rule of law.
He was referring to an article where a woman, a Hispanic woman in the country illegally, but whose kids are legal, because they were born in the United States, and we have what's called birthright citizenship. If you are born in the United States, even if your parents are here legally, you're a citizen. And in the article, this woman said she's glad her children voted for Trump. She believes that Trump wants to deport criminals, not people like her who crossed the border undetected back in the 1990s. And have never gotten in trouble with the law. Quote, they know who's been behaving well and who hasn't been, she said. So in response to this, this guy, Jonathan V. Last, said, it's madness trying to spend your political capital helping people, i.e. illegals, who are no longer a major part of your electoral coalition. So in other words, if we keep you in the country and then make you citizens, but we can't count on your vote, well, why should we be doing that? Why should we be helping you? I love how increasingly people who are there to help push the progressive agenda forward, regardless of what party they're in, I love it when they start saying the quiet part out loud. Yes, the whole bringing people out of the shadows and allowing them to earn citizenship movement, that whole thing was just about adding Democrat voters. Keep them dependent on the government for services, and then they'll reciprocate with their votes. But if you can't count on them to do that, then go ahead and deport them, for crying out loud. Oh, you are listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right. I started talking to you last week about the increasingly tenuous hold that Syria's dictator, Bashar al-Assad, like his father before him, had on the country. That rebels had now taken the second largest city in Syria, Aleppo. Well, it's been a pretty eventful weekend because now the rebels have taken the largest city in Syria, Damascus. And Bashar al-Assad has fled the country. He's out. He has been offered sanctuary by Russia. So what does this mean? Now, I told you that on the one hand, it's very good for the United States that Syria has fallen because they're two major sponsors and supporters were the government of Russia and the government of Iran. Okay? Neither one are good guys. And this exposes their weaknesses. But it's more complicated than that because the people who are trying to get rid and have now since gotten rid of Assad, those people are linked to Al-Qaeda, the people who attacked America on 9/11, and ISIS, the Islamic State. In fact, we actually have 900 American troops in Syria right now. They are there trying to counter Islamic fanaticism, jihadism. So with that said, we have, and this is, you know, the latest, we have General Frank McKenzie. He used to head CENTCOM. And he's, of course, retired now. And he was speaking on ABC's This Week with Martha Raddatz about where we go from here.
900 U.S. troops in Syria. What happens to them? What do you think they should do at this point?
Well, Martha, it's important to understand why those troops are there. Our troops east of the Euphrates River, paired with our SDF partners, are there to keep a lid on ISIS and prevent violent extremist organizations from gathering strength and being able to attack the homeland of the United States. ISIS aspires to attack us. As we know, ISIS launched a successful attack against Russia just a few months ago. That's why those troops are there. So any decision to bring them out would need to weigh that going forward. And I'm certain that the new administration will take a hard look on that when they come into office.
But what about the chaos that's happening right now, the change that's happening? What does that mean for those U.S. troops who are there? Is there more danger?
We'll be able to defend ourselves. I think actually there's probably less danger right now than there was before, because what you see are the Iranians, Lebanese Hezbollah, and in fact the Russians are all on their back heels now as a result of what has just happened in Syria. One of the best equipped, best trained, and most capable forces in all of Syria today is actually our Kurdish partners east of the Euphrates River. They'll be able to defend themselves. I'm confident of that, Martha.
And you brought up Russia, Iran, Hezbollah. What does it mean for all of those countries and the region?
They all placed a bet on Bashar Assad, and that bet has turned south for them. Russia's interest is maintaining its air base and naval base on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean. So they're going to try very hard to keep that base with whatever entity comes into power in the wake of Bashar Assad's departure. The Iranians need Syria as a land bridge so that they can move equipment into Lebanon in order to threaten Israel. So that's going to be they're going to be very concerned about that. And of course, Lebanese Hezbollah has also propped up the Syrian regime for many years. For all three of these entities, this is bad news because now they had a partner, not necessarily a good and capable partner, but a partner. And he is gone. He's left the stage. So they're going to have to negotiate with who comes in. So it's bad news for them. It's less obvious, Martha, who it's good news for. I'm not sure it's ultimately going to be good news for the people of Syria. We could have an Islamic State arise there, which will have profound negative implications across the region. That is possible. There are other possibilities as well. And I think in the next 48, 72, 96 hours, this will begin to become clearer to us.
And you talk about an Islamic State. The Islamic group leading this rebel offensive is considered a terror group. They had ties to al-Qaeda. Who are they? I know they say they're trying to be different now. What do you expect?
Well, we have a $10 million bounty on the head of that group, Jalani. So he has a significant track record. Certainly he could evince new ideas coming in. It's been my experience, though, that typically they don't. I think what you're going to see is a period of infighting. They'll hold the capital. They'll try to establish themselves. They'll try to seek recognition. Russia will try to work their way back into their good graces. Iran will do the same. I think Israel will be concerned about the possibility of attacks across Golan. It's my understanding that the Israelis have probably moved some forces into a buffer area in southern Syria in order to protect themselves. So it's a significant moment in Syrian history. I wish I could be more hopeful that it will mean good news for the Syrian people. I think that's very unclear right now.
Yeah. So there's a reason you haven't seen Israel taking sides in this war. Have you noticed that? Israel has stayed out of this conflict, and keep in mind, Syria is immediately to the north, the northwest of Israel. The northeast is, or rather, it's to the northeast of Israel. The northwest is Lebanon. So, Syria could be a staging base for not just ISIS, but for Iran. That's not going to happen, and that part is good. The only reason Russia is there, and this goes back in history a little bit, but the reason why Russia is there is because President Barack Obama basically invited them in. Remember, he didn't want the United States to support the opposition to Bashar Assad way back in 2011. That's when this war started. And so Vladimir Putin basically, with our blessing, filled the void. And, of course, he ends up with military, you know, bases, a naval base and an army base out of that. And so if you're wondering why Russia and Iran are in there, it's because we chose to step back and even welcome Russian influence. So if you're wondering why is all this happening now, that could be summed up in one word: Israel. Israel, first of all, extinguished Hamas in Gaza largely by ignoring the United States. Remember, we were telling, oh, you need a ceasefire. You need a ceasefire. And don't go into southern Gaza. They said, excuse me, we have a war to win here. We were attacked. We're going after them. Their main sponsor was Iran. So Israel ends up taking out Gaza, taking out Hamas in Gaza, killing their leader, Yahya Sinwar. Then they went up north and they took out the head of Hezbollah, the terror group up there that had been menacing Israel. His name was Hassan Nasrallah. And now you can't even, Iranians can't even protect Assad in Syria. So Donald Trump's reaction to all of this is to say that the U.S. should stay out of this conflict, that we don't have any vital interest. There is no reason for us to step into this. Now, that was when Assad was still in power and still fighting back. So we'll see what to do. You know, but here's a name you're going to be hearing a lot in the next few weeks: Abu al-Jalani. Abu al-Jalani is the leader of the coalition that just ousted Assad, Bashar al-Assad, and took control of the country. He is the guy that we have a bounty on. He's a bad guy. He was heavily involved with ISIS and al-Qaeda earlier this century. He now says he's broken with them and he wants a diverse government. He has seen to it that his forces haven't attacked Christians, the few remaining Christians in Syria. We'll see. But remember that name, Jalani. And we'll see where we are in a week.
So, John, from just tuning in, listening to this, you helped out explain it. Bad guys against bad guys.
Yeah.
But yet in Syria, we have 900 troops. Do we leave them there? Do we take them and get them home and just let those people figure out their worlds?
Oh, those troops are safe.
Okay. And how are they?
They're not going after those troops.
Okay.
They're east of the Euphrates, as you heard General McKenzie say. And close by are the Kurds, and they are one of the most impressive fighting forces, and they're on our side. So we're okay where you are right there. We're trying to put down the forces of the most militant, fanatical Islamic forces that would love to attack the United States, either here or attack U.S. installations abroad. So they're there for that reason. They're not there to take sides in the war. All right, it is 22 minutes after 7 o'clock. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with the social media sweep. First one this hour as the John Carlson Show continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what's going on the social media world at 7:28 in the morning?
Found something useful from our afternoon host, Ari Hoffman, who's on 3 to 6 on KVI.
Mm-hmm.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Ari caught something that was in the Seattle Times about Bob Ferguson, the governor-elect in our state. And Ari posted that Ferguson tells the Seattle Times, Ferguson has, quote, no problem with deportations of individuals who are criminals under existing policies and law, and then acknowledged that the president of the United States has that broad legal authority on immigration. And then Ari's question becomes, do you think the guy who sued Trump 100 plus times is being honest or not? Is there a way to read the tea leaves here, John?
Well, how could he object to something that is A, completely, totally constitutional and legal, and B, federal?
Right, yeah.
So when he said, oh, I don't have a problem with that, that's almost like saying, I don't have a problem with us having a Department of Defense.
And I suppose last week's Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruling against Dow Constantine may have played into that a little bit as well. Having to
Ferguson humiliating
reevaluate his answers on questions like that.
No, that slapdown of Dow Constantine by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals when he tried to argue that he should be able to prevent the federal government
flights
from flying out of Boeing Field with people ordered out of the country by immigration
adjudicated
judges.
Out of the
just
country.
Again. That left a mark. That's the kind of thing that is going to influence what happens around the country when local officials, state officials, county officials, city mayors realize, oh, I don't have all that latitude after all when it comes to stopping the feds from getting rid of people in the country illegally.
Real quick, good news story here to round out the social media sweep. Residents in Lewis County are celebrating the fifth anniversary of the Dolly Parton Imagination Library for Lewis County. It's kind of a joint effort with some charitable groups and Dolly Parton's charity foundation.
Uh-huh.
But the Dolly Parton Imagination Library is an early literacy program that provides thousands of free, high-quality books to kids up to age 5, regardless of family income. In the 5 years that it's been operating in Lewis County, the library's provided 138,000 books to 2,600 kids enrolled in the program throughout the country. And then Dolly Parton's Imagination Library was launched back in 1995. And since then, it has distributed over 200 million books globally.
Whoa.
And that story comes from the Centralia Chronicle newspaper website.
Goodness sakes.
But pretty cool.
That many. I'm impressed.
She's done so much this year.
Yes. Just America's sweetheart, Dolly Parton,
she
right?
She really is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It is 29 minutes after 7 o'clock. By the way, something very interesting happened in King County politics over the weekend, and it hasn't hit the papers yet, but I know all about it, and I'm going to share it with you coming right up.
Alumni that you are, University of Washington, did you know Happy Holidays from the Husky Marching Band CD is still available? Brad McDavid gave this to me as some of the songs I used to do when I produced Husky Game Day.
That goes back a couple of years.
Yeah. And we didn't mention, too, big news yesterday, of course, bowl games announced. If you didn't hear, UW football will face Louisville in the Sun Bowl. That'll be San Diego, December 27th. Washington State football will face Syracuse in the Holiday Bowl. Oh, that'll be December 27th. Okay. And then we got El Paso on New Year's Eve for the Huskies in Louisville. Could not find a Christmas CD from the WSU marching band, Phil. We need to get word to them. Symphony. Yes. I got the symphony, but not the marching band, Phil. There you go.
It is coming up here at 23 minutes to 8 o'clock. So something very interesting happened over the weekend. Every 2 years, the King County Republican Party, and I think the Democratic Party, same story, They have what's called a reorganization meeting, which means that the party leadership comes up for reauthorization, re-election, if you will. And it's usually what you call the usual suspects, people whose names you know very well from grassroots activism going back a long time. And this past weekend, the Republicans, the King County Republicans, had their reorg meeting. It was at the Eden Church in Newcastle, which is a town between Bellevue and Renton. Anyway, the current King County chairman, a guy named, we've had him on the show a bunch of times, what I call the man with three first names, Matthew Patrick Thomas, has been a popular guest on the show, and he opted not to run for another term. And so someone who is very popular, very well-liked, and experienced in politics, Patty Mann, a former King County firefighter and paramedic, ran to succeed him. And they held the election over the weekend at the Eden Church, as I mentioned. And instead, an entirely new cast of characters came in. They defeated everyone that was on the slate to succeed Matthew Patrick Thomas and replace them. And the new county chair is a woman named Jolie Lansdowne. Jolie Lansdowne and I have something in common. We have both run for the state legislature in West Seattle's 34th district. And I ran, my goodness, 1984. That was the last year any Republican was elected to the legislature in the city of Seattle. For some reason, when I decided to run for office, I decided to do it in the town where I grew up, West Seattle, even though, again, Republicans were a quickly vanishing breed within the entire city. Well, I still got 49.2% of the vote. Came close. Very respectably close. But I lost. Jolie just ran for the 34th. She fell short, too. But she ran for county chair, and she won overwhelmingly. I guess you could say a whole new crowd is in town running the King County Party. They are, many of them, supported, they all supported Donald Trump for president, of course. And for that matter, most of the people running to succeed Matthew Patrick Thomas and the other people running at various offices of King County, you know, your committee man, committee woman, your vice chair, et cetera, most of them were for Donald Trump, not all of them. But most of the people who prevailed against them, led by Jolie Lansdowne, actually supported Semi Byrd. And, of course, they are moving on from Semi Byrd, but it'll be very interesting to see where they're going to take the King County Republican Party, because the Republican Party now has a completely new cast of characters, many of them are names that were not familiar to me. So you talk about replenishing and refreshing and starting all over again. That is basically what the King County Republican Party is about to do. And what was driving these activists who, again, took over the party with a decisive majority is They just didn't feel represented. There's no particular politician that they're there to push for. Usually that's what drives insurgencies against the status quo. They have an alternative candidate that they want for this or that office. But again, this was after the election. So they weren't pushing a candidate. They weren't pushing a particular cause like, abortion or guns or taxes or whatnot. They just basically said, no, we're just tired of the people who've been there. And we want new people and a whole new approach. So I've asked Jolie if she would like to join us, and she would. She wasn't able to make it today, so we hope to get her on the show in the next couple of days and share what her vision is and what her plans are. And if people want to get involved, there's a whole new crowd at the King County Republican Party. Your comments, certainly welcome at 206-421-5757. Now you can call or you can text your comments. Again, that's 206-421-5757. And, you know, the meeting started off very, very cantankerous and adversarial. People at the mics, endlessly, calling it points of order, and Matthew Patrick Thomas trying to keep order in the House and everything. The bottom line, though, is for all the histrionics and for all the yelling back and forth, it was very clear very early that the group called We the People, if you will, the reformers, they had the vast majority of the people there, almost 2-1. So there's, I actually said to one of the leaders, I said, why all the conflict? You've got the votes. I mean, it's very clear what's going to happen here. But anyway, the entire slate of the We the People candidates running for various county offices or county party offices ended up winning. And we'll see what that means for King County going forward. One of the things that it also shows me is that more and more political activism is also happening outside the party structure. In fact, you can make a very good case that if you are politically right of center, the organization that is doing the most to challenge and change the status quo in Washington politics is not the Republican Party at the state or the county level. It's Let's Go Washington. It's Brian Haywood's organization. They understand the power of what I call practical populism, which is you want to be populist and open up your movement to people, whether they consider themselves Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and you want to give them ideas worth voting for, which means going the initiative route. Because in terms of politics in Washington, we're a one-party state. The Democrats completely dominate the state legislature, and they'll have another 4 years at least in the governor's office with Bob Ferguson. So that's your other major takeaway, is that increasingly people are either opting to change and challenge party leadership, or they're just going outside the party altogether. and saying, you know, I only have so much time, I have so much energy, I only have so much money. I want to get involved in a way that's going to have the most effect. So I think I'll get involved with Let's Go Washington. I know that I am certainly encouraging as many people as I know to get involved with Let's Go Washington. I think they're the future, and I'm very excited about where they could take us. It is coming up here on 48 minutes after 7 o'clock on The Commute with Carlson, 12 minutes to 8. Good morning, everybody. The Commute with Carlson continues. When we come back, a comic makes fun of Tesla owners, but wait until you hear the angle he's coming from here. It's straight ahead. Okay, this is going viral.
Here's the key line here on the song.
Oh, Dan Fogelberg.
Snowing Christmas Eve, watch.
I do love this song.
Dan Fogelberg, yeah.
Dan Fogelberg left us way too early, didn't he? Anyway, a comedian was making fun, not of Tesla cars, but of some of the people who drive them. And Donald Trump got a hold of this and reposted it. So now it's gone viral, millions of people checking it out. This is all over the internet right now. This is, again, a comedian making the case. Well, you'll hear it.
My favorite thing about the election is a lot of liberals were driving Teslas. And now they're trapped. Dark MAGA Elon came out. Gotcha. The T on the back is for Trump. You funded the last 6 months of the campaign. And they can't get rid of him because Republicans are now like gasoline. I can just see people now with a Sharpie at night going up to it. R-U-M-P. You're not going to be able to look at a Tesla without thinking about that ever.
I love that. The T stands for Trump. Elon says, I gotcha. add some interesting context to that story in the Seattle Times about how people were taking out their frustrations on the election by flipping off people driving Teslas. Some of the people in the Teslas, no, I'm on your side.
Buyer's remorse.
Still a great car, though. All right. It is coming up here on 4.5 minutes to 8 o'clock, hour number 3 of the John Carlson Show, straight ahead.